Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning, in the first hour of our show, we'll be talking about health privacy. And really here, what we're talking about is who should, could, does have access to your medical health records. Our guest for the program is Twyla Braes. She is president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. This is a health care policy organization that's based in St. Paul, Minnesota. And we'll be talking this morning, at least in part, about something called the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, known for short by its initials, HIPAA. And in part, this is something that was designed to keep medical information confidential. In fact, some people say, though, that it's actually made it harder for people to access their own information and in some ways made it easier for third parties to pass that information around without our consent or knowledge. And we'll be talking about this issue here in this first hour of the show and, of course, welcome questions from people who are listening. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. So if you might be listening around Illinois and Indiana and you're listening over the air or you're listening on the internet anywhere in the country, you may use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. Just let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. In 2000, the Minnesota Physician magazine selected her as one of Minnesota's 100 most influential healthcare leaders. She has provided testimony to the Minnesota State Legislature and also has spoken around the country in different states and also has testified before a federal committee against the idea of a national patient identification number. She's also been interviewed in the media, radio, television. She holds a bachelor's degree in nursing from Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota, and she in her career as nurse, has specialized in emergency room nursing. She is also a certified public health nurse, and she is joining us this morning by telephone. Ms. Braes, hello.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us. We certainly appreciate it. And I think it's something, it's a subject that is important to discuss, and I think that it's something that probably a lot of the time people don't think very much about and certainly don't think much about it until they're up against a situation where they're trying to get their information, they're trying to get information for a family member. We have situations where people find out they've been turned down for insurance based on perhaps medical history, and they didn't even know that information was being passed around. So it's the kind of thing that I think probably people don't really become aware of this issue or don't think about it very much until they're right in the middle of it.
Correct. Yes, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about what the HIPAA privacy rule does and does not do. And in fact, we don't call it a privacy rule. We call it a no privacy rule. And I'm sure that's some of what I think you're looking for this morning.
Right. Well, this probably, I don't know how many people are aware of the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, HIPAA, and all of its various parts. And one part of it does indeed have to do with privacy. And apparently it in the act has to do with a lot of other things. But the thing that we want to focus on here is privacy. But just for a second, you want to give the thumbnail sketch of HIPAA, what it's all about?
Right. The HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, does have various sections to it having to do with portability of insurance, for instance. But the legislation, which is a federal piece of legislation, really has got been most known for a section called Administrative Simplification. Excuse me. And Administrative Simplification is essentially the law essentially allows information to be standardized across the country, and it has given us the foundation to create a national health information structure across the country. And so part of what that piece of legislation did was say that all data had to be standardized, different pieces of it, and that if Congress did not pass privacy protections, then the Department of Health and Human Services could write a rule to implement privacy protections. And Congress did not do anything. And, of course, the reason that they put it in there is that they understood that when the public would hear that they were planning on essentially standardizing data across the country and creating a national health information network, that the public would logically get worried about the privacy of and the control of their information. And so they put this little piece in there that said the Congress has to act. They have to put privacy law together, and if they don't, the Department of Health and Human Services has to act. And so Department of Health and Human Services did act when Congress did not, and they came up with this thing called the HIPAA privacy rule.
Okay.
And that rule was finally implemented in 2003. And the unfortunate thing about it is that it does not protect privacy whatsoever. And the reason I say that is because the rule used to have language called national priority purposes language. And under that language, it said that there were certain types of exchanges of data that could take place without the knowledge or the consent of individuals. And there were 12 of those, and there still are 12 of those. They just don't have that national priority purposes term attached to it anymore. But so government can have access for national security purposes, for public health. Organ donation entities can have access without your consent in hopes of trying to get organs for transplantation. Medical research has some ability to get access without consent. There are a variety of entities that can do this. And then there's access for payment, treatment, and healthcare operations. And that is both without the patient's consent and often without the patient's knowledge. And it's a bigger thing than most people understand, because payment seems to be simple, treatment seems to be simple, and they actually have long definitions. So there's a lot of things that reasons that the information can be shared that are not what the patient typically thinks of as payment and treatment. And then healthcare operations is a 306-word definition. And so there are many, 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 many things under that which information can be shared without patient knowledge or consent. And furthermore, under payment, treatment, and healthcare operations, they don't have to have any accounting of those disclosures. So if you go to your doctor and say, you know, how is my record shared? And your doctor has to have an accounting of all the disclosures except for those. So you won't even know how your information was shared, and you can't find out.
Some aspects of this, I would expect that in the beginning, when people started talking about the ability to share information, they were thinking, well, wouldn't it be a good idea if our health records were in a kind of a standard form, that all the same, that the basic information you'd need if you were a doctor would be there, and that it would be accessible in a way so that if you went to one doctor and then you decided to go to another doctor for additional treatment or a second opinion or whatever, that the other doctor could easily access your health information and could know everything about you. I suppose by the same token, you would want it available so if there was some kind of an emergency and you couldn't speak for yourself, they would at least have some idea about who you were, what your pre-existing conditions were, what drugs you were allergic to, you know, what kind of problems you had. It seemed like in one sense that being able to – having that kind of database and being able to access it in some respects seems like it would be a good idea.
Well, you know, I think there are varied opinions about that. The Harris poll Interactive did a poll back in 2005, and they found that 28% of the public even knew that a national system was planned. 60-some percent of the public did not. And essentially it was 50-50 over those that thought it was that the benefits overrode the privacy concerns, or the other 50% that thought the privacy concerns usurped the benefits. So those aren't the actual numbers. They were in the 40s, 40-something and 40-something. But clearly it was sort of like a 50-50 idea as to those who thought it was a good idea and those who thought, well, wait a minute. So I think that it has been sold to the public on that idea that if you have an emergency, we'll have all the information, or if you go to a different doctor, we'll have all the information. But I think, you know, what our organization likes to do is we like to see, well, now, where did this idea come from? And the idea came from a group, which is called the Work Group on Electronic Health Interchange, Data Interchange, which is known as WEDI, W-E-D-I. And within that group are lots of government entities, the health plans, and the data industry players, so all of those who want to sell the software, sell the hardware to create electronic medical records around the country. And they are the ones out of which the HIPAA language came, and they are the ones who are benefiting from this move to put all of our medical records online and make them accessible. Now, for some patients, I agree with you. They will think, well, this is a great idea because no matter where I am, they'll be able to get the information on me. Other patients who call our office who have actually looked at their medical records or had a problem with one doctor don't like the idea at all. Because, for instance, people will say to me, well, I have nothing to hide. And I will say back to them, have you ever looked at your medical record? Do you know what's in it? I had someone call here who said that she was just transferring her medical records from, let's just say, Dr. A to Dr. B, right? Mm-hmm. And she just looked at them because she went and got them. She's going to carry them over to the next doctor. She looked at them, and she called me up in panic because she said, I can't believe what my doctor said about me. How do I not give these to Dr. B? Hmm. Now, if you think about that and you think about your medical records, you don't know what's in your medical records. You don't know what kind of opinions have been expressed about you, the things that they have said about perhaps why you're having a certain condition. And you may have some biased comments in there. And then those could be shared, and essentially you couldn't escape if they're online for every doctor in the country. Where will you go to get a fresh second opinion? That's one thing that people are concerned about.
Yeah. Well, just as a way of following up, on that, a slightly different question. I'm thinking about the fact that we are advised as good consumers periodically to check our credit records. And you can do that now. The credit reporting agencies, it's mandated that they let you do that. And one of the reasons is we say to people, well, it's a good idea for you to know what's there, particularly because you might look at it and see, well, there's something here that's not right, so that you might have the opportunity to correct a mistake. And that's important because if you, say, apply for a loan, they're going to check that record. So I'm just thinking about the fact that who thinks about, you know, we're advising people to do that about their financial history. I'm thinking, well, whoever thinks about doing that with their medical history? I don't know if people know that they could do it, whether they could do it. Do you, in fact, recommend that at some point that people actually do that? They say, I want to see, you know, go to their HMO or go to their doctor or whatever and say, I want to see my record so I can at least see what's in there.
Well, that's one thing that the HIPAA rule does do is it allows you to see your record and it allows you to ask for amendments, although amendments doesn't mean that you can force a doctor to change what he has written. It means that you can add your own information. But you're not always able to see your information in your medical record, particularly if they think that you might be using it for litigation or they think that whatever has been written in the chart might be harmful for you to see, in which case they're allowed to deny you access to your medical record. They also don't have to give you necessarily the entire, every last word. They can give you a summary of what's in your medical record. And then I think the last thing to think about that is, you know, where is your medical record when it's online? Because let's just say that you have a medical record with this oncologist over here, and you have it with a hematologist over there and a neurologist over there and a general practitioner over here. And let's just say that they have looked online and they have looked at a piece of your medical record from one doctor and they have added it to theirs. Now, will you know in all the places where your medical record is what information it is or how to even correct it in all of those places? Mm-hmm. And so if you have your medical record sitting in one place at your doctor's office or in one institution, then you can correct it in that institution. But if your medical records are online and available to everyone, it's very hard for you to correct it. It's very hard for you to even know where it went. In fact, it could have gone all the way over to India to be transcribed, for all you know. And so, you know, I think that makes it very difficult. One of the things that we really would like to see is that individuals get informed consent requirements, or they get informed consent rights, so that you would have to be asked before your medical records could be put online and available across the country in either a state-based information network or the national information network, that you would have to be asked. Now, if you go to a certain clinic, for instance, or a certain hospital, and it's part of a certain healthcare system, right, they usually have what's called an intranet, so it's internal to that entire entity, and then they can look at it online that way. But if it's going to go out into something that's bigger than the entity that you actually have contracted with by being a patient, then we really feel like, you know, your consent is necessary.
We have, I think we have a caller we're getting set up here for, and I also want to make sure that people who are listening know that questions and comments are welcome. We're talking about the issue of health information, your health records, and who can access them and what sort of control that you have over that. Our guest for the program is Twyla Braes. She is president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. It's a health care policy organization that's based in St. Paul, Minnesota. She has done a lot of speaking on this particular issue and has been interviewed quite a bit talking about this issue of medical privacy. Besides her position at the Citizens Council, her career has included pediatric emergency room nursing at St. Paul Children's Hospital and school nursing in the St. Paul and Robbinsdale School Districts of Minnesota. She makes her home in Minnesota. She has a bachelor's degree in nursing from Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. She is, I think I said, maybe I did, she is a certified public health nurse. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Do you think, in fact, that somehow people have this idea that their records are confidential, that they won't be shared without their consent, and that they are either assuming that or some language that's used to describe their records in this business of exchange is leading them to believe that those records are secure and won't be shared without their consent, when that really isn't the case?
I think that is true, and I when you go into the doctor's office, one of the things that you're given is a notice of privacy practices. That's what it's called. That's what the federal rule requires it to be called. And then you're asked to sign a piece of paper. Now, I asked a state legislator here in Minnesota once, as I was talking to him, I said, what does that piece of paper that you sign, what does it mean when you sign that piece of paper? And he said to me, it means that my medical records are between me and my doctor. And I looked at him and I said, no, it does not. Look at what it says. What it says is, these are all the ways that we can share your information. We can exchange it. We can give it away. These are all the ways that we can do that without your consent. This is the only piece of paper that you have that tells you that we're going to do something, but we don't have to tell you when we do it or every time we do it, and in some cases even if we do it. So if you bother to read the Notice of Privacy Practices, which we believe should be called the Notice of Disclosure Practices, if you bother to read that, you realize that you don't have any control over your data. Now, the interesting thing about HIPAA is it did some things that we call the HIPAA hassle factor, which is, you know, if you wanted to go see your Aunt Lillian in the hospital, they wouldn't even tell you if she was there,
right?
But that's what Aunt Lillian actually wants. That's the kind of information Aunt Lillian wants, to be out there. But she doesn't necessarily want everything about her medical, her psychological, or her genetic history to be everybody else's business. But that's what HIPAA doesn't protect. So it protects, and it makes you think that your information is very private because you have to go through all these hassle factors. But underlying that, where you don't even see it happening, there's all this exchange of your very private information that's happening without your consent.
Just for a second to go back to the HIPAA hassle factor, because I've read quite a bit about this particular thing and the fact that apparently a lot of people and a lot of doctors and healthcare institutions have the wrong idea about what HIPAA says, and that in fact that they may, you know, for example, that someone goes to the hospital inquiring about a relative of theirs, could be their mom, could be their aunt, could, you know, whatever. And they hear from nurse, from doctor, from whoever, they said, well, we can't we can't talk with you about their case because of HIPAA. The fact of the matter is that's not correct unless the patient has specifically requested that they not talk about the case. They certainly may. Why is it that apparently people in the healthcare industry seem to have got the wrong idea about what HIPAA says?
Well, I think it's just because HIPAA has been talked about as though it is a privacy rule. And so there have been, it's complicated. It's very long. The whole thing, including the explanation of what it means, is around 400 pages long, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all this information that makes it, I think, complex and unclear. And just because hospitals and clinics do not want to be sued, do not want the Department of Health and Human Services to come after them for an infraction or to fine them, then they want to be extra careful. But, of course, as I said, that's really not the kind of privacy that anybody cares about. And what they can do is the kind of privacy people care about, and that's not being protected at all.
We have a caller here to bring in the conversation. Let's do that. Someone listening here in Urbana, where we are, and it's line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm not sure how important this is, but it seems as though periodically when I go in to see the doctor or the dentist, they say, we want to update our medical records, and they ask me the same questions they asked me 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago, and it's stuff that happened a long time ago. You know, when was your first period? Well, heck if I remember. You know, all kinds of stuff like that, you know, operations, dates, things like that. And as you get older, things begin to accumulate, and you don't necessarily think when you're younger to write all these details down because you don't know what people are going to ask. And I said to the dentist one time, I said, why are you asking me this stuff? You already have earlier answers, which should be more accurate. You should have them in your file. My impression is that they ask these questions so they can find it more readily, that it's on the top or higher in your pile, on your file. And what do you think about this?
Well, I think there are different reasons why those questions are asked. Sometimes the health plan will require it as part of the contract with the doctor or the dentist that the patient regularly fill out a questionnaire about their current health status. Sometimes people will remember one thing one time and they'll add something the next time. And at one of our concerns about this accumulation of data and the easy access for making it electronically is that because of all the information that you share, those who can access the information can essentially build a profile on who you are, putting all your data together. And we're not possibly sure yet how they could use it or how they might use it or what they might be planning on doing with it. But I think it behooves people to think very carefully about how they fill out those kind of questionnaires and to see does your doctor really need it for that visit? Or is this just a different accumulation of data that's happening at a different level that has to be sent into the health plan where, you know, they're just building more and more of a profile on who you are as an individual? And now when you understand that information could be shared hither and yon, essentially, you know, you have to think about that. What do you want people to know, and how can you best protect yourself there in the doctor's office? It's very interesting. The California Healthcare Foundation did a study. It was reported in 1999, and at that time, so we're almost talking 10 years ago, at that time, 15% of the public was so concerned about the privacy of their data that they were falsifying questionnaires. They were not even going in for care. They were using different doctors so that they wouldn't have someone who was accumulating all the information on them. They were giving false names. They were paying cash. They were doing all these things 10 years ago. And so we have to wonder, as people get more and more worried, especially as we move towards an online electronic medical record system, what people will do and how they will try to protect themselves and thereby hurt themselves because they aren't giving all the right information to their doctors.
It seems to me that part of the problem, I missed part of what you were saying because I was talking with the person who answers the phones and deals with the technical stuff for a little period in there. But it seems to me that part of the problem is that the for-profit nature of insurance, and that it pays the insurance company to try and deny service and to ration service based on pre-existing conditions. And that if we had single-payer insurance and took the profit motive out of it, that this would be one protection for preventing denial of service because of what we have in our records.
You know, I think it's it's an interesting thing to ponder, but I have to say that I look at Medicare and what's happening today in Medicare, which is essentially a single-payer system for those who are 65 and over. And the health plans in Medicare get a certain amount of money per year per beneficiary. And so it is in their benefit to essentially consider that their money, owned money by the health plan, because now they have it in advance, right? And so they still have a rationale for denial. But the other thing that is happening in the hospitals, for instance, I talked to an anesthesiologist who Medicare decided that the surgery wasn't necessary that he did. And so they didn't pay him for it. Zero. That was what he got paid to do the surgery. And so there is an incentive there on the part of the hospitals and the doctors who aren't getting paid by Medicare to also ration care by virtue of the fact that they won't be paid. So, you know, I'm not positively sure that will answer the problem about rationing.
Mm. Interesting perspectives. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Just to go back to something to underscore something that you said just a moment ago, which seems to me to be a subject that deserves real concern, and that is that people would argue that it's important for you to be honest with your doctor, to tell that person your complete medical history, tell them what's going on with you, because that's the information that he or she is going to use in determining your treatment. And that if we have people that, because they're concerned about the security of that information, are withholding information from their doctors, that can't be a good thing for their treatment.
Well, it's not a good thing in many ways. It's not a good thing for the individual because they clearly have a healthcare need. And they are trying to give the doctor what they think the doctor needs in order to take care of them. But they may not tell the whole truth because they're hoping to protect themselves, and they don't realize that the doctor really needs that little piece that they're not talking about, right? So one, they might delay going in, and then they finally go in, but then now they're trying to not tell the whole truth, and then whatever they get it as a prescription may or may not work for them. So then we have not only the original delay, but then perhaps the secondary delay before you can actually get to what you really needed. So it's not good on that level. It's also not good on the fact that if the healthcare system, if the doctor's office and the hospital become a place that is no longer trusted by patients, it's very hard to get the trust back. And so if the hospitals and the doctors are perceived as more data collectors for, you know, corporate or government entities than they are caregivers, then we start to lose the trust that's necessary for giving medical care to people in need. And I think at the third level is the fact that if you aren't trustworthy, if you don't trust and you don't tell the whole truth, then whatever kind of data is being used to conduct research is skewed and could be inaccurate and lead to inaccurate research studies. So there are many, many pieces in here, and those who are the purveyors of essentially having access to everyone's data have not really looked at that squarely in the face, or they have and they are just, you know, moving forward anyway. And because really the healthcare system is for the patient. And if the healthcare system does not work for the patient, is not trustworthy in the eyes of the patient, or the data is used against the patient in some form or fashion, then, you know, what do we have? You know, because if you don't work for the patient, then it doesn't really work. So I do think that you know, all around, it could damage what's happening in healthcare.
We're a bit past our midpoint. I have another caller we'll get to in a moment. I'd just like to introduce again our guest for this hour, Twyla Braes. She's president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. This is a health policy organization that's based in St. Paul, Minnesota. In 2000, Minnesota Physician Magazine selected her as one of the state's 100 most influential healthcare leaders. She has given testimony before the Minnesota State Legislature, speaks around the country, has been interviewed by many national radio and television stations, including the NBC Nightly News, NPR, CNN. She's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Washington Times. She holds a bachelor's degree in nursing from Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. She has specialized in her career as a nurse in emergency room nursing, and also she's been a certified public health nurse. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone else, a caller here on our line number one. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
One thing that I don't think has been talked about, but I realized because a brokerage firm wrote me a letter and said that the backup tapes containing all my information had been lost. And, you know, your social security number and all your accounts. And it seems to me that your medical records are as secure as the computer system, if they're on computer lines, or are as secure as the honesty of every clerical person that touches your chart. So I'm going to hang up and listen.
You raise a very good point, and that is something that that is a serious concern within this whole movement towards online electronic medical records. And it is because if you watch the news, what you will see is that there are more and more news reports about someone's data being lost, someone's data being taken. In the Providence Health System in Seattle, Washington, Oregon, there were 360,000 some patients whose information was compromised because it was stolen. And that system, at the time it was reported that I saw the report, had already spent $7 million trying to deal with the damage and, you know, helping people with their credit reports and trying to figure out whether, you know, social security numbers were being used elsewhere, et cetera. And so that's just one, and the number is growing of those that whose medical records have been hacked into, lost, compromised, accidentally put online, accidentally information mailed out to everyone in some form of a hard copy, but it's not their name, it's not their information, it's different. But the newest thing happening is the medical ID theft. And that means that somebody uses your medical identification to get services or to get paid as though they were a provider for services, and so it's fraudulent, right? But it changes everything in your medical record because it's somebody else inputting data as if they were you. And so now that's a danger to you medically, but it's also, you know, your Social Security can be tapped into and used for other purposes. You know, you lose your whole medical identity. And so there are many complications for putting it online. And one of the things that we like to tell people is rather than creating a national health information network where your information is online accessible to everybody who wants to access it, good or bad, is, you know, why don't we have flash drives? Why don't we each have our individual medical records and put on a flash drive? And there are some physician groups around the country who are starting now to do this and sending their patients who might be going to Florida for the winter, let's just say, right, with a PDF version of their medical records so they can take it to any hospital around the country or around the world. And that is clearly much more secure than having it online and accessible to anyone who has the skill or, as the woman caller said, you know, the honesty of the individual sitting there in the hospital or the clinic or the health plan or the government, you know, it's all based on their own integrity. And, you know, that's a lot of people to try and count on to have integrity.
I want to get in here a question that came in off the air. And it goes back to this issue of what's in the medical record and do you feel that it's accurate and what can you do about it? And apparently this comes from an experience the caller had with a local doctor where the caller felt that she was having a medical problem and that the doctor was having a hard time or was maybe not doing a very good job in figuring out what was wrong. And it took apparently repeated visits to the doctor before the problem got resolved. And the caller says, as a result, in her medical record, she is described by this doctor that she has consulted as, quote, an uncooperative patient. Mm-hmm. She feels that that's not a correct representation of her as a patient. And if you read her entire record, you'd see that. But she's wondering, well, you know, what do I do about that? Is there some way that I can have put into the record some statement from me that says, well, now, look, here's what happened, and this was my feeling about it, and I don't think that I was an uncooperative patient. I think the doctor was just not doing a very good job and trying to figure out what was wrong with me.
Well, as I said, you are able to ask for your medical record to be amended. You are not able to require that it be amended, and so this woman can ask that happens, but the unfortunate thing is that this statement was made and is now part of her permanent medical record. And medical records can be amended by another statement, but you can't like strike something and take it out. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, one thing that was very clear even in my own training, you know, as a nurse, is that you can cross something out, but you still have to be able to read what it was that you crossed out. So, you know, nothing can ever be, like, stricken and actually disappear. And that piece about being an uncooperative patient could end up in being viewed by lots of people when she disagrees. And that's, you know, that's just the problem. And there's not a great deal of solution except she can try to amend it. And that, you know, and so she has been lucky enough or privileged enough or whatever you want to call it, to actually look into her medical record and see that those words are there. But most of the people have no idea what kind of words are written about them in their medical record.
Well, let's continue. We'll talk with someone else. We have a couple of other callers, and the next is in Champaign and on line one. Hello.
Hi. I had an incident of concerning my doctor, concerning my pharmacist. I one day went to pick up a prescription, and there was a note on the door that says, shut down your cell phone because this is required to protect medical privacy pursuant to HIPAA. And I thought, I thought this was an unnecessary, unintended HIPAA hazard. Is this required by the Act? I followed the directions eventually, but I just felt this was an overbroad, unnecessary interpretation of HIPAA that at the time seemed an inconvenience to me. So who was right, myself or the pharmacist?
I think that you were right. I do not recall anything about having to gather anyone's cell phone. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't want your cell phone broadcast to everyone and made available to your health plan, to the government, to others who are now tapping into pharmacy records, I would not provide it. So it would be interesting. You know what I always tell people to do when these kind of mandates are given to you, like, you know, you have to do this, right?
Yes.
Show me where it says that. You know, where does it say that you can force me to give my cell phone in order to get medication? I've not heard that before, and I cannot believe that that's true, because I just have no recollection that any cell phone requirements have ever been had. And I would think in prescriptions that I've gotten or others that they do not have my cell phone number and they've never asked for it, and they're not going to get it.
You think this is an unintended, unnecessary HIPAA hassle, right?
Right.
Shut down your cell phone to get your prescriptions, because otherwise they say they'd be in violation of HIPAA.
Yes, I would ask for them to show you the words on a white piece of paper that say such a thing.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Let's go to Bloomington, Illinois for the next caller. This is line number 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah. Excuse me. I have had my medical records and found things that weren't true. And I've requested they be changed, and they, in one case, they did, but it wasn't still accurate. It still, you know, kind of made it seem the way it was. And it indicated that I had requested the change be made, which is fine. At least something was done. But I also wondered, I have two questions. I wondered if something could be done. If I have thought about writing my own note and asking it be attached to my chart. Is that possible?
Yes, you can ask for that to be done.
Okay. Then the other thing is that, did I understand you to say they do not have the doctor's office, for example, does not have to share all my medical records with me if I request them?
Right. They can give you a summary.
And they can withhold some. That doesn't seem right at all.
Well, I think if the American public actually read the whole privacy rule, there's a lot of things in there that they would think are not right. Now, the one really good thing about the privacy rule, or the no privacy rule, as we call it, is that every state can pass a stronger law.
Mm-hmm.
So that Illinois or Indiana, I think you're from Illinois, you would be able to talk to your legislators and say, you know, do you realize this doesn't protect privacy at all?
Mm-hmm.
Here in Indiana or here in Illinois, we should have a stronger law. And the federal privacy rule allows for a state, any state, to have a stronger law, and that law will rule the day.
Okay.
So if that law and the state law says you have to have consent or you have to, you know, do whatever the patient wishes, you know, that sort of thing, that's what will happen.
Then they can and will share with any other entity all the record, but not me.
That's right. They can. The HIPAA says that they have to share your medical records with you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another provision that says that they can do just a summary.
Mm-hmm.
But they could share the entire thing. HIPAA has only two sharing requirements, and mm-hmm. one is with you, the patient, and the other is with the Department of Health and Human Services and the federal government for them to check compliance with the rule. Everything else is permissive sharing, which means if your doctor, your health plan, your hospital want to share your information, they can do so without your consent or your knowledge, and they can share your entire medical record. They can share it with your name. There are some limits on research, but essentially the rule allows broad-scale sharing.
So that form that I sign, consent form that I sign, doesn't mean anything.
It is not a consent form.
Ah.
Read it carefully, and you will see that it says that you have, most of them say, I have received and have read the Notice of Privacy Practices. That's all you're signing. There's no consent in there whatsoever.
I always ask for a copy of everything I sign when I go in, but is that too long to read for?
The Notice of Privacy Practices is often in very small print, but here's what we recommend.
Okay.
And you can find on our homepage
the
part of the rule that agrees with what I'm saying here.
Okay.
We recommend that you do not sign it at all.
Ah.
Because then later when they have shared your information with whomever,
mm-hmm.
and you find out and you complain,
mm-hmm.
they will say, but you signed right here you read and had received, and so you knew we were going to share it.
So I can refuse based on the fact that I haven't read the thing.
No, you can refuse based on the fact that the rule says that they have to make a good faith effort to get you to sign it. But it doesn't say that you are required to do so. And so right on our homepage, cchconline.org, right on our homepage, we have a big red block with a little lights going around it saying, don't sign the form.
Okay.
And then we have an actual copy of the rule highlighted in yellow so that you can see. And you can take that piece of paper to your doctor's office and say, see, here it says you have to make a good faith effort, but I don't have to sign it.
All right. I don't have internet, but I can get to it. cchconline.org.
Online.org.
Online.org, okay. And in the meantime, what do I say? If I say refuse, and you know,
they'll get feisty.
Yeah, they will.
Get feisty, but you just say, I know that I don't have to sign this form.
Okay, because it says that I've read the whole law and I haven't. Is that a good basis?
No, it's not that you've read the law. It's that you've read their notice of privacy practices, and they are required by law to hand you a copy if you haven't seen one or if you want one. Every time that you go in, you can get a copy.
Yeah, I have. They have given me one. But what other basis then do I have to say no?
Your whole basis to say no is that the rule does not require you to sign it.
Okay, okay.
That is your basis, and that's why we have the language on our website.
Okay. Okay, it's cchconline.org.
That's it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, can you, Ms. Braze, can you, maybe this is a naive question, but can you as a patient go to your health care provider and say, I don't want you sharing my health information with anyone without my knowledge and consent. Even if you did that, are they bound to honor your request?
They, you may ask the question, and if they say that they agree to not share it, then they are bound to honor that until they tell you that they changed their mind, in which case they are required to notify you that they have changed their mind.
Uh-huh.
And then you have no control over them sharing it.
So then it really doesn't, you could try doing that, but it sounds as if that really, they're actually not, they may say today, okay, fine, we'll do that. But if then next week they decide to change their mind, sounds like there's really nothing you as an individual can do about
it. That's correct.
Well, we're coming down to the point here where we have maybe 3-4 minutes left. Is there anyone in Congress who is concerned about this issue and is saying, well, maybe we ought to do some kind of amendment to HIPAA, or there ought to be some additional law providing people greater privacy or greater control over the information?
Well, there are two bills. One's called Wired for Healthcare Quality Act, and the other is called the PROTECT Act, and it's PROTECH, like tech, PROTECT Act.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, neither of them require consent. And the other unfortunate thing about them is what those two bills in Congress essentially do is encourage the reporting of patient and practitioner treatment data to the federal government without consent. And we always look at that, and we understand that the federal government is trying, because of Medicare and the rising cost of health care, they're trying to pull together your data and my data and do studies and tell doctors how to practice medicine, sort of universal one-size-fits-all medicine. And you and I and everybody who's listening to this program are as different as night and day, and it may not work. And so, unfortunately, these two bills actually encourage more sharing, reporting of data, and transition to more centralized medical decision-making. And on top of all that, it doesn't have the consent requirements for patients to even protect themselves from that centralized decision-making of medical decisions, or to protect themselves from having their data put online. So it's as though there is this talk about PROTECT. You know, one of them is called PROTECT, right? But it's really not going to protect, and it's not going to protect the data, and it's not going to protect your right to individualized, customized medical care that works for you. So we would like to see much more. We'd like to see something truly protective at the federal level, and we have yet to see it, unfortunately. And so what we do know is that states are allowed by the HIPAA rule currently to enact their own laws at the state level, which can really and truly protect the individuals in that state.
Just real quick, something that I wanted to take note of. We talked about just how it is possible for a lot of people to access your healthcare information. Just one specific bit of information I was, I guess, a little bit surprised about this. It has to do with people's prescription history, the history of all of the medications that they've been prescribed by their doctor. This also, the bottom line here also is that people's prescription histories are being bought and sold, and they have no idea.
I think that is something that has really raised the ire of the public as they have figured that out, and I think states should be enacting laws against that. Because a lot of people, one of the ways that they protect themselves and their privacy is to pay cash for the prescriptions. And now they understand that the health plans are going to the pharmacies and buying the prescription data. So if you manage to pay cash to your doctor and you have no claims that the health plan can even see and you're trying to do this all very privately to protect yourself, suddenly you realize that you can't get out from under getting medication without giving your name. And now the health plans are going to know, and they're going to be able to use that information against you. Or the government, who, you know, whomever, wants access to the data. And I think that this has really raised a red flag for the American public.
Yeah. And again, what you would suggest to people if this is something that they're concerned about, they ought to be talking with their legislators and perhaps they certainly with their members in Congress. But it might be more significant or more effective if they talk with their state, their representative in their state house, wherever they are.
Right, and to say to members of Congress, do not take away the right of states to write stronger laws, because some members of Congress want to do that. They want to take away the right of state legislators to write stronger laws and essentially make HIPAA the bottom line, all you've got, which means you've got nothing, right? So the message to Congress is don't take away the right of state legislators to write real privacy laws. And then the message to state legislators is, write us that law.
Yeah. Our guest this morning, Twyla Braes, is by her training and experience a public health nurse. She is also president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. This is a healthcare policy organization based in St. Paul, Minnesota. If you're interested in finding out more about them, you can look at their website. It's www.cchonline.org.
Ms. Braes.
Pardon me. We don't want to give people the wrong info. Yes, it's CCHC for Citizens Council on Healthcare. CCHConline.org. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you, David.